Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is the very first official Valks Valley episode. Brian and I have been doing the Valks Valley segment on the back half of our Death Lineup episodes, but with the Valkyries starting their season, the inaugural season, playing their first game, we decided to make this the very first episode. Now, I don't know if this is going to be a regular thing or if we're how many Valks Valley only episodes we're going to have away from the Death Lineup, but we wanted this one to be special because Brian had a chance to interview Juiced Juste. I'm leaving it for you. You said you were going to figure out the pronunciation. You told her in this interview that you were going to figure out the pronunciation of the last name.
Still working on it. I feel terrible because I think I told her pre-pod, I was like, I pride myself, or I said it on the pod, I pride myself on being able to, like, you know, whatever accent it is, I could, if I hear it a couple of times, I can get it down. But I almost think it's like, maybe the audio wasn't picking up, like, I need her to tell me in person or something, because when she said it a couple of times, I thought I heard Yoshite, but then it was like, is it Yotsite? Like, with the ts?
It might be, because she said that Americans have a pronunciation problem.
I don't.
Whatever that is.
I shouldn't.
Is.
I usually don't.
No, she said with this specific sound, Americans generally have a problem in her last name. That's what she said.
Okay.
So anyways, so you talked to her on Thursday, so the day before the opener. We didn't know exactly when we were going to put this up, so you had some questions that were based on the opener. But I thought it was a really fun interview, and what you realize is this is a 19-year-old woman who has been a professional, you know, since she was a young teenager. And so there's a very professional person there, but also someone who is young. And I thought you got that part out of her. The getting to know Juiste part was really cool. But at the same time, she's a very mature athlete, professional athlete person in there as well. So I thought the interview was really fun, and you did hit on, are you coming? When are you coming? All of those questions. So people who are kind of wanting to hear it from Juiste's mouth, she does answer whether or not she's coming this year and what the plan could be for next year and when she possibly wants to come to the U.S. to meet with the team. All that good stuff is in there. But before we kick it off to the interview, was there any like thing that just you took from that interview as you were talking to her?
Just kind of what you I guess said in the beginning is that, you know, she's a 19-year-old professional, but I mean, I think it's normal with women to be older maturity wise than your age. But I think with her just like having to, you know, travel so much as a child without her parents, like that forced her to grow up pretty quickly, getting plopped into a country and not knowing the language and having to survive with, you know, figuring out the language with all these girls who are from the country. And so I think, you know, her having to do that has forced her to grow up a little quicker. And I'm still excited, of course, for the Valkyries to draft this person, because I think she's going to be pretty good. So
I mean, and we saw on Friday, and we'll come back after the interview. We want you all to listen to the interview. It's a 40-ish minutes with Brian and Juiste, and then we'll come back because we do have to talk about the very first Valkyrie game. But I think, you know, you hear, okay, what did they do with their first pick? Well, they stashed her. They kind of knew it sounds like Juiste and teams understood that she was more than likely not coming. She was going to stay. She even mentions in the interview, not to give anything away, but she wants to get stronger. She's still a very young person and she's going to be playing with grown women, and you see some of the grown women in the first weekend of games. Like, there are some really good teams in this league, and they were on display this weekend, so that makes sense. But the other thing that was kind of, I don't know if it was alarming or if it just finally stood out watching game one, is they don't have anybody from their first draft that is on the team. Cheyenne Sellers, they cut her before even the first preseason game, and then she got cut again. Caitlin Chen obviously was kind of a long shot to make the team. So they are really, really banking on their overseas influence on this team, and there's still players that they're going to be waiting for. So this first version of the team is not going to be the finished product, I don't think, for the end of the season.
Yeah, and you know, if you were listening to this podcast, you could have mentally prepared yourself for Caitlin Chen not making this team, because the public outrage, I don't know if you saw any of it, but it was pretty wild how many people were so mad that she did not make this team. But we knew this whole time.
Well, when we talked to Sabrina, I mentioned it. I said this market would really love her to make the team. You were young, but I lived through when Jeremy Lin was on the Warriors, and he played, and every time he played, like, there was like real excitement in, you know, we are from an area where there's lots of different types of people, and I knew that she would be very welcome, but she didn't make it. And at the end of the day, basketball is and should be a meritocracy, and it's based on how good you are and not, you know, what fan base you could bring or whatever. Though if you stash someone at the end of the bench, then maybe. But they only have 12 people on the roster. They cannot play with positions and spots like that. So
agreed.
All right, let's get to the Yuste interview. Hope you all enjoy. And once that is done, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about a little bit more about the interview, and then we'll talk about Valkyries game one.
We have on today the Golden State Valkyries number one draft selection. She was selected with the fifth pick in the WNBA draft. We have Yuste Yochite. We were talking a little earlier on the podcast and trying to get down the name pronunciation, and it turns out I've been saying it wrong incorrectly this entire time, and quite frankly, I have not been able to get it down yet. So Yuste, can you please correct me and say the correct spelling, or not spelling, but pronunciation of your name?
So the first name, you got it perfect, like on point, but like the last name, I understand that, like, for Americans especially, it's really hard, but it's pronounced Yochite. But it's just,
yeah,
I guess for you guys, it's just
shouldn't be that difficult. I pride myself on being able to hear someone say something and be able to repeat it back to them. And so I'm going to have to go back to the drawing board and work on that one. But yeah, I'm glad to have you here. You are currently in Lithuania training for Eurobasket. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
We just started.
Yeah.
And so you told me that this first week has kind of been a little easier, but how has that been in general? You know, I guess I'm kind of wondering, like, what that looks like in terms of like a day in the life of Yuste.
I mean, so basically, as you mentioned, I mean, the first week is really kind of like just a introduction week. I guess also because we're, as a country, like, we're not used to, you know, qualify for these kind of competitions. So, I mean, a normal day right now, it would be like just two practices, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And then the morning, most of the time, is just a lift, kind of activate your body, get some weights there. And then in the afternoon, normally it would be like a 2-hour basketball practice. But as I said, like, it's the first week, so it's just like get to know the plays. I mean, the head coach is new, so it's really, it's not easy, you know, because you always been used to one coach, and now the whole system kind of changes. But that's the part of the journey that you have to go through when you have a new coach. So yeah, the first week I think is just gonna be really to kind of get into shape, because a lot of players' season finished like 2 weeks ago, so we were kind of all on vacation. So yeah, for the first week it would be like more or less like all the days would look the same.
And I thought I saw somewhere that it's been 10 years since Lithuania has been in Eurobasket. Is that correct, or is it a different time frame?
No, that's correct. Yeah, the last time they played, I think it was 2015, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Awesome. So that'll be fun to watch for Valkyries fans to keep an eye on how Lithuania does throughout the tournament. But I guess I wanted to start with kind of understanding your background and where you come from. I know we've already mentioned Lithuania, but you were born in the United States. Is that correct? In Washington, D.C.?
Specifically, I was born in Virginia, but I just say like to the non-Americans that it's Washington, D.C., because I don't think a lot of people would know where that is.
And so was it that your parents were working at like the embassy? And is that okay? That's correct. So your dad went to an American college and played basketball there?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he went there. My mom kind of followed him through it, but I mean the basketball kind of career for him didn't work out. So he just you know, they stayed there just to earn money, and yeah, they worked at the embassy, and then well, they had my brother, and when they found out they were having me. They were just like, let's wait. So like the second kid gets a passport too. So me and my brother, we have an American passport. So that's always nice to have.
Was your brother born in Lithuania or was he born in the States?
He was born in the States too, like a year okay. before.
Nice, nice. And when did you guys move back to Lithuania? How old were you?
I was barely 1 month old. So it was really just for the passport. Okay. Yeah.
It's really just for
yeah.
And then your father and your uncle played basketball professionally in Lithuania as well?
Mm, yeah. I mean, my uncle, I would say, was the better brother between them two. I mean, he played in Europe also, but again, like, injuries happened and now, like, he stopped. But yeah, both brothers were playing.
And then, I guess, when did you first start? You know, it sounds like there's a basketball influence, you know, throughout the family here. When did you start playing?
Well, as like playing and being with the ball as soon as I could walk, I think with my brother always, we were, since we are like 1.5 year apart, always with the ball. So I guess like since, I don't know, 2 years old, you know, at first playing with the mini hoop. And then, you know, at 6 years old, kind of I started like going to like real practices.
So I feel like with you, like the thing I hear a lot is how young you were when you started playing professionally, when you started playing and representing the country. So when did you start playing, I guess, professionally?
I would say I was around 15 years old because, well, when I signed to go to France, I was 13 when I signed. Then I got there, I was 14, but I was still like kind of, I was not really with the pro team. I was still like with the youth team. It was an academy built like right next to it. So I was kind of playing more with my age girls. And then I think like there was a 2 year span where I just kind of grew into that. And I started practicing more with the pros, playing more. And then like, I think when I was 15 going to 16, that's where I really started like to play and maybe have more minutes. So I would say like around 15.
That's incredible. And so you were playing in France. Is the city pronounced Lyon?
Yeah, Lyon.
And so you were playing there for 5 or 6 seasons. Did you learn the language while you were over there?
Oh, yeah, I'm fluent now. I mean, fluent. Yeah. I speak like a street language. You know, I speak a lot of slang because I kind of grew up there in the academy, you know, with all the kids, you know, speaking slang, teenagers. So like if you would ask me to write good French or to speak like to a native person who speaks good French, maybe we would not have a nice conversation. But like I speak freely, I mean with whoever, but it's just like not a correct way to speak most of the time.
But how many languages do you know then?
Awesome. Well, the French, Lithuanian, and English.
I feel like I read somewhere on Twitter, and I don't even know if this is true or not, so I guess you'll have to let me know, but you're going to play in the Spanish League next year?
Mm, that's right.
And do you think you might try to learn that language as well?
For sure. I mean, I think Spanish language was on my list for a long time, and you know, I think it's like when I went to New York, so this is a fun fact, I think 2 years ago, went to New York and a lot of people speak their Spanish. And I was like, The English was not even necessary because I was going with a Spanish friend. And you know, every store we go to, and it's just like a Spanish dude, you know, there being a cashier. So, it was just a funny moment. But yeah, I mean, I think Spanish is just such a powerful language. And I think that would be a complete package for me to speak that language as well.
Spanish, French, English, Lithuanian, you're just like, I don't know, Mandarin is like a, it's like the other top one, I guess. One might be a difficult. How many countries do you think you've gotten to visit now through basketball? I feel like, I imagine even without basketball, you've probably visited a lot too, but as people from the United States, traveling out of country isn't as, popular or not popular, but just not, it doesn't happen, I feel like, as much with everyone. If you ask 20 people in the United States, have you been out of North America? I feel like 10 of them are going to say they have not, maybe even 15. So I wonder, you know, how many countries that you've gotten to go to.
I mean, your country is big. There's no need really to leave, kind of. And like, just for fun, I don't really like go visit because I don't really have that much time. But like through basketball, yeah, I mean, you have to like play in a Euro Cup competition or EuroLeague, you know, is you travel basically once a week at least somewhere, whether it's, you know, all around Europe. So it's, you don't really have time to visit the country or the city you play in, but you know, it's always like nice to get like a different point of view of how people are living and like to see something new, like other than the country you're in at the moment. So it's definitely nice, but it's not like, you know, I visit a lot of countries for like vacation or something.
Yeah. I finally got to get out of North America like 2 years ago, and I went to visit my brother in Spain. I've been to Mexico plenty of times. I've been to the Dominican Republic, but outside of North America and going to Europe was only like 2 years ago, going to Spain. And then since that, I've been to the UK, I've been to Paris, I've been to Portugal. So that's I really enjoy it. So I guess, do you have like I was looking online to see if I can find a video of you like pronouncing your name, and I came across some like Turkish airline kind of commercial where you're talking about like traveling. And like, and if you look like you're like 16 years old or something, and you were saying like you like you're saying like you liked going to different places and trying different foods. Do you have like a favorite style of food outside of your home country?
Spain. For sure, Spain. I mean, that's an I don't know, it's an easy answer for me. I think Spanish food is just really like all the tapas they have is just unmatched. Like comparing to like other type of cuisine in like Europe. I mean, I've been only like really living in France, and I don't like French food, like really the real French food. So there's not a lot of things to compare. I mean, nothing compares to Lithuanian food for me. Like that's just everything. But I mean, all of our food is based on potatoes, basically. So it's kind of...
Okay, I was about to ask you, my partner, her mom makes like this Lithuanian style dish. I guess she's like 50% Lithuanian. I think her grandma might be from there. We've been calling it kugela this entire time, but we looked it up last night, and it looks like it's pronounced like it's spelt like it's pronounced kugelis. Is that you familiar with that dish?
Yeah, kugelis. Yeah, I don't really like it that much, but I mean, it's good.
Oh, come on, it's my favorite.
So it's good then. It's really good. It's good. It's potatoes basically with sour cream. Like you just
exactly.
I feel like all of our dishes is just potato sour cream, but in a different shape, basically.
She makes it for like Christmas or Thanksgiving, and it's always something to look forward to. So I guess now pivoting to, the Valkyries. I think the question that's on everyone's mind that I feel like I've gotten different variations of an answer to. Are you coming to play this season for the Valkyries? Is this a set? Do you know for sure if you are or you aren't, or is there still kind of in the middle of maybe there's a chance, maybe there's not?
I will not be coming out this summer. I mean, it was something we kind of agreed, like both parties agreed to just not come out, to just focus on the Eurobasket, and they were okay with it. So, I mean, we had some calls And it was like really nice conversations with the GM, with the VP. So that was just a mutual kind of decision.
Nice. Have you gotten a chance to... So I think yesterday, the final 12 was announced. Are you familiar with any of those players? Do you know who was announced as the final 12?
Well,
I guess not all 12, but like, are you...
No, not all 12. Well, I know the... Of course, the three... Is three... Yeah, three French players that are there. Two Belgian players, I played against them. Who else?
I watched that game.
Yeah. Well, I know all of them. Actually, like, I know who they are, but I don't know them personally.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you, I guess, kind of more staying on the Valkyrie side, but just in general of San Francisco as well? Like, are you familiar with San Francisco? When you've been to the United States, you've been to New York, Virginia. Have you been to anywhere else in the States? Has California been somewhere that you've visited to, or is it not yet?
No, that side at all. Like, I didn't know. When I had the call...
West Coast.
The West Coast at all. You know, I thought it was like... I was asking about the weather when I had the call. And I thought, like, it's really hot there.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me, I don't know in Fahrenheit, but it's like in Celsius, it's like... They told me it's like 25. So that's like... You know, sometimes you need to put a hoodie on or something, like, but it can be also like nice with a t-shirt. That's my perfect type of weather, because, well, here you don't get more than 30 Celsius, basically. So I haven't been to that part.
I just looked it up. I should know this, but I don't. 25 degrees Celsius is 77 degrees Fahrenheit. And I will say that in San Francisco, the place that you will eventually be playing, it's not like most of the other area. Like, it just is pretty consistently cooler in San Francisco. Let me see if I can do a quick... Like, I feel like lately it's been in like the 60s. So what would that look like in Celsius? 15.5.
Yeah, that's kind of low. But it's fine. It's still bearable. Like, you put like joggers and, you know, a hoodie, and I'm good to go. Really,
it's my everyday outfit. I go to take my dog out to the park, and it's just joggers, exactly. Hoodie.
Yep. So I was thinking like Texas or something. Yeah, no, just couldn't.
Yeah,
do
so
it.
We the states that like kind of surround. I went to school in Arizona, and it got to a point when I graduated that it was 115 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 46 degrees Celsius. It got really hot, and that's just
right next door.
But it's not. That doesn't. It's just AC. Everyone has air conditioning, and you can't, it's not really encouraged to like walk outside during those times. But I remember walked like 2 minutes to the gym, and I was just like sweating buckets profusely. And it was like, dude, this is a 2 minute walk.
I've seen some TikToks where people, I don't know, like around there, I guess, like cooking some stuff. Like, they put something in a pan and
on the window shield. Yeah.
Yes, something like that. And it cooks by itself. Yeah, that's crazy, you know.
Yeah, I'll say, you know, San Francisco is like a weird one throughout the entire Bay Area, Northern California, where it's pretty consistently cool. And then the days where it does get nice, it feels like one of the greatest cities on the planet Earth. Because, I mean, I've always felt like San Francisco is like kind of one of the most European cities that is in the United States. So maybe that'll be something that's kind of nice for you to translate over and feel comfortable with more quick. But that when I came back from Europe the first time, I appreciated San Francisco so much more. He was like, wow, this is such a cool city.
Hey, baseball fans. It's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply.
But yeah, so I guess, you know, whether it's been intentional or not, the Valkyries have leaned into like a heavy international presence. Like you mentioned, there is six players from Europe, the two from Belgium, and then the French players. And I think Temi is from the UK, I think. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, because I know she's playing for that team. And then there's one player from Australia. So does that make it easier for you to feel like more comfortable and connect with teammates quicker, or doesn't really do much?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know, because I haven't been there, but I think maybe it will make me feel like more kind of home, like maybe easier to adapt. I don't know. Especially like, well, I played against half of the team already, so maybe that helps, yeah. But I don't know.
I guess, what was it like when you went to Lyon for the first time, being like, I don't know, 13 years old and trying to connect with all these French players, and maybe you didn't know the language then, or I guess, how was that?
That was hard, because French people don't really speak English. And especially, I mean, that's a fact. That's a real fact. Like, there are some countries in Europe that, like, they have problems with English, and especially like teenagers, when I was living at the academy, you know, it was hard. There was like 2-3 people in the whole academy that was willing to try and to speak to me. But really, like, me learning French really helped me to kind of adapt, because I didn't see like other choice. Now I see like these days, like people speaking more or trying more, you know, having more confidence. But when I was there, that was, I don't know, it was kind of depressing at times, because you didn't really have nobody to speak to. But yeah, I mean, in the States, I would have no problems.
Yeah, I know you're like probably a pro by now in terms of traveling alone, but how was that, I guess, when you first started doing it without parents? And, you know, was that lonely? It's hard to get deep, but I imagine it. Yeah, I remember when I went to college for the first time as an 18-year-old and left my parents, and I was sad.
Yeah. I don't know. I always was a person that was kind of, I don't know, independent, I would say. I mean, the first flight I took alone, I was 11 years old. So my parents just kind of, because I went to like, just a quick backstory. My brother was playing in Italy for academy, and that team, that girls team, kind of invited me to play for a tournament. So I said, okay. And then my parents just dropped me off at the airport, and, you know, you just figure it out. And I think from yep. that age, you know, ever since, you know, I had no problems traveling alone. And I don't know, of course, like, traveling alone is kind of lonely, especially when you have a layover or something like that, but it's fine. Like, I have no problems doing it.
Yeah, you just got to get the iPad rolling and start downloading movies offline. And I think I was like 16 or 15 or 16 when my parents made me fly alone for the first time. And I was like, what the hell? Like, do you guys, I don't know if I'm ready for this. It's like a traumatizing moment. I still remember it. But I guess now pivoting to the draft, I feel like when I started kind of digging into the draft this year, a lot of like reputable draft analysts weren't entirely sure if you were draft eligible, because for those who don't know, for the listeners, I believe if you are born in the States and attend an American college, or if you attend an American college in general, you have to turn 22 the year of the draft. So as long as you're turned 22 in that calendar year, January through December, draft is in like April, then you're eligible. But if you are, yep. I guess, born outside of America and you don't attend an American college, you just have to be 20, and you turn 20 yeah. in, is it November?
November, yeah. That's right.
So what, I guess, did you know this whole time you were eligible, or were you also questioning yourself like, oh, well, I was born in the States, so maybe I do have to wait until I'm 22?
Well, to be honest, I didn't think it's going to be a problem, really. Like, when I started my season, like, of course, I was not really focused on the draft, because I had the season start and mm-hmm. it was just really far. But then like around, I don't know when it was, maybe February or something like that, or even March maybe, that my agent, you know, texts me. It's like, oh shit, we don't really know if you will be eligible because you're considered American. And I was like, it was just kind of quite a shock, you know, because, well, I don't consider myself American, of course, because
yeah.
I have no family there, no ties with the States. I just have a passport because, well, I was lucky enough to be born there. And yeah, but after a few conversations, you know, they cleared me out kind of. They were like, you know, it was barely a month there, so.
And I guess what was that? I mean, I think most Valkyries fans has probably seen like your, because, you know, you were not there at draft night. You were in, were you in France? Were you in France or Lithuania?
France. We were having playoffs.
And so I think most people have probably seen, you know, the moment where you get drafted and you hug your family. But did you know, like, what was that night like? And did you know that there was a good chance you were going to the Valkyries, or did you think, you know, maybe you were going to go lower or higher or?
Well, I didn't think anything, to be honest, because obviously when you talk to teams, they don't say, oh, for sure, you know, we're going to pick you, of course. So, but I just had this feeling, I don't know. I remember having a dinner before the draft, because French time, it was like 2 a.m. So we were having dinner and my agent asked me, like, where do you think you're going to go? And I said, like, number 5, going to San Francisco. Just like that, because I don't know, I just kind of had a feeling, you know, from the call I had with them. It just felt really natural and just a gut feeling, and it came true. I don't know. But it's just a funny story, you know, to kind of have this kind of feeling.
You basically manifested it. And I think I only called it like a week before. I was like, I think there's a real chance that this is going to be who we get at 5. And, you know, here we are now a couple months later, and now I'm getting to talk to you about it. So that's, you know, really cool in retrospect. But now kind of taking it to the basketball side, and I guess to the people who have never seen you play before, how would you describe your game?
A lot of playmaking for others. I don't play at point guard, but, you know, I still like to like share the ball. Really, I like to read a lot in the game, like after pick and rolls. I would say that's my main strength, really, like off the pick and roll, just to read the situation, read the defense, and then, well, shooting, I would say also. I mean, that's about it for now, obviously.
Yeah. what's like an aspect of your game that you're most comfortable with, like your favorite skill, I guess?
I think the reads, just how I read the game, that it just, I don't know, it kind of comes natural to me, you know, because I can see, I mean, I'm not saying I'm the smartest one on the court, but I just say, like, whenever I play with some players and I see, like, sometimes they need to really be focused, or sometimes they're struggling to, like, remember plays or to read the defense. I don't know, for me, it kind of comes natural. I like to be learning the game. I mean, I watch a lot of games and stuff. So I think that aspect, I think that for me is the most important, like, because you can add like the physical and you can put up some weight and get faster. But I think like to get your IQ is not, it's not that easy, like, you know, to get it higher, kind of.
Yeah.
To understand the game more, you know, it's not that easy as like to get stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. And I guess since you mentioned, like, you know, there's still stuff that, you know, you're going to add to your game eventually. So what is like an aspect of your game that you're like actively trying to improve on?
Just the physical part, really, to get my body stronger. That's what I'm planning to do after the Eurobasket. Really, like, defense, obviously. I always say to everybody, I don't kind of want to be a target on the court, because I feel like every team is searching for that, you know, who to attack when who is on the court. So just not to be the target, kind of work on that, work on my speed, my footwork. And then obviously, like, always, I'm obsessed with the game, so I always want to work on like little details, even if I think I'm pretty good at like reading the game. I think you can always get better, like shooting off the ball, off the dribble, like little details.
I feel like you already got a leg up on people, considering you're 6'1 or 6'2 and you know, then figuring out the defense, like you've already got like the size on your mm-hmm. side.
Yeah.
So I get you know you mentioned you're obsessed with the game. So who's your favorite player of all time?
Don't really have one, to be honest. I just love watching the game, love to watch how players act on the court, like their body language. For example, like one of the favorites is Marin Johannes,
mm-hmm.
mostly because of, I think, how confident she is and how she doesn't care to take a shot when it's, you know, it's a tight game, and she will not care, you know, either it goes or it doesn't go in. So
she lets it fly. The one leg, like almost like a runner from the 3-point line.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, it's really hard to guard because you don't know if you're gonna drive or you're gonna let it fly. So
exactly,
I mean, I think it's a smart move. Obviously, it's hard to master it, but I mean, really, it takes hours, I think, to practice that shot. But really,
oh,
like 100%. Her, yeah, like but her confidence and the way she like carries that around her is. It's really something I look up to, and I mean, I had the chance to play with hers for some years, I think for 4 years, 4 or 5 years. So really, I got a lot from her, and then just like all the players, I love to watch how they play, like to pick up a move or something, just a detail, but I don't really have a specific player that I'm really like focused on.
Are you familiar with your nicknames? Being, I think it's the baby-faced assassin as well as You Stay Magic. Have you heard those two?
Yeah, the baby-faced assassin, I think that was when I was 13 or something. That was when I still had a baby face. Well, I still do have, but at that time it was really, I was looking like a baby, really.
But, are you familiar with the NBA players with those nicknames?
Well, Steph Curry.
Yep. He's Oakland Curry. To San Francisco. Yep. So I think that when everyone saw that, they're like, oh, wait, they call her the baby-faced assassin. And everyone's like, oh, it's a match made in heaven with her coming to San Francisco. Stephen Curry is still in the Warriors. And then You Stay Magic, I believe, is the Luka Magic nickname. You were compared to, like, you're like the WNBA's version of Luka Doncic playing so young in the pros and overseas. And do you want your... Do you hope those nicknames change one day, or are you cool with them?
I don't know. I don't know if they will change. I don't know if there will be some new additions. I don't know. I mean, we'll see. I mean, I'm fine with them. It doesn't bother, you know. So
yeah, I think they're great nicknames. I think naturally, you know, I'm sure others will add on, and you'll have some more. Do you have like okay? So you said you're not coming this season, but I think I don't even know if like you know. As athletes, you're focused on like the now and focused on, you know, like not really focused on, you know, what could happen, more so on, you know, right now. And but I guess, have you thought about like maybe there was a chance you were to come this year? Did you ever think about like what your goals were for this season, which now will be next season, your first year in the WNBA?
Well, before I got drafted and I was talking to the teams, I always said like I'm kind of flexible, like I'm open like to come out this summer. Obviously, I would do the Eurobasket, and I'm open like if the team doesn't really need me for this year, I'm open to do it on 2026. I mean, and with the Valkyries, it was I think at the end it was a good match because that's what we both wanted. Mm-hmm. But you know, I was really ready to kind of do both, and well, now I'm just really focused because the 2026 is really far. And now I'm just I really like to be in the present, and now it's like the main focus is on the Eurobasket.
Do you have you thought of like any I mean, I know, you know, with your priority for the national team, is there like a long-term goal for you, whether that be like a championship or an MVP or a gold medal in 2028 or, you know, like is there any long-term goals that you've thought about?
Well, I love to dream big. I mean, when it comes really to national team, I don't really think about personal awards like getting the MVP or something. I think it's just really trying to put our country back on the map because it's been, well, gone from Europe for 10 years and now we're finally back. And then obviously first time when I get started again in Europe, then go to the World Cup, like step by step. And then obviously the main goal is the Olympics, of course, 2028 or 32. I don't know yet, but you know, it's a long way when you kind of come from nothing and you just have to build over and over again.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I guess take it away from, like, move away a little bit from the sport. Do you have any hobbies outside of the sport? I know you like taking yeah. photos and videos with you have a separate Instagram page for that. Is that kind of one of your favorite non-basketball activities, or do you have a few more?
Oh, for sure. No, that's the top one. I think like it really, I don't know, it calms me down, puts my thoughts away. And also I enjoy doing it. I enjoy editing them. I'm not a professional, for those who will go check the page and don't come at me. So it's just really something I do for fun. You know, whenever I have a couple of days off, you know, I go to visit a country or a city, and I just like to, you know, film the nature, some art, how people interact and things like that, and just kind of put them together, put a little music, and just, you know, share with
my... Let it fly.
Just let it fly, exactly. So it's really something I enjoy doing it. And I mean, apart from that, I don't really have time, you know, to have something else to do. I mean, obviously you have things like being my family and my friends. My cat obviously is my top priority, to be honest. Whenever I'm back home, you know, I just don't let him go off my side. So but those are my top three, I would say, if somebody asked me.
Is the cat gonna make its way to San Francisco?
I don't know. I would love to, but I had some problems with him. Because when I got him for my birthday almost 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Everything was fine, but then, you know, we had some away games and some games you had to be like for a week away. And well, my cat didn't take it in a good way. He started peeing in my bed. Peeing like constantly on my bed. So I had to kind of ship him out back to Lithuania to my parents, you know, where they, most of the time they're home.
Yeah.
And he can go outside, because obviously I was living in an apartment in France. So he was just kind of stuck. So I don't know, maybe in the future when he is really all grown up and learns how to behave, maybe he will make his way onto San Francisco, but not for now.
As a pet owner myself, I can say that, you know, it's definitely difficult if you're, you know, not going to be home all the time. But you know, you think with cats, like, they're pretty self-sufficient. I felt like I have a golden doodle. It's like I got a dog when I was in my senior year of college. It was like 2020. It was during COVID, so I didn't have to go to class, so I could just be with the dog all the time, Razor. Yeah. And I lived with like six other roommates, and so she got really used to being like social really quickly. And to this day, it's benefited her. She can be with any human being and be fine. She could be with any other dog, because they used to bring dogs over, and she'd be fine. So it was just a good time to try and raise a dog. But also, like, I'm not a traveling basketball player. I go to work. Have to leave this apartment and go to the office two times a week, and it's, you know, she gets to have me around most of the time. So
she's
there's
really
no peeing
then.
In beds over here.
Yeah, I mean, with dogs, it's kind of easier with that. You know, they're not really that revengeful, but cats are just...
They, it's tough. Yeah, that was a vendetta. Like, screw you. You left me. I'm making it miserable up here.
Yeah, so advice for others, like, don't get cats sometimes. But they're, at the same time, it's my favorite thing in the world, you know? So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's a hard relationship we have.
While you were chatting there, I went through... I made a ton of questions, and I sent them over to Lauren, your agent, and I thought that I was like, oh, I'm not going to get through most of these. I just have these as, like, you know, we'll get to whichever ones we get to, and we got through all of them. I've got nothing left. I wasn't really expecting to get through all of them, so thank you. You know, you've been great at answering these questions. I guess to end it here, where should we expect to see you stay in the year that you are not with the Valkyries? So you have Eurobasket coming up. I believe that's in the middle of June, but you'll be preparing for that already, starting now, leading up to it. And then after Eurobasket, is it just off season until that Spanish league starts?
Yeah, basically, I think I'm gonna take a week off or something after the Eurobasket, but then it's like off season. That's where I will really try to work on my body to get it stronger. And also I need to have another call with the team, but I mean, there was an idea for me to come out for a couple of days to kind of meet the team, like, and see everything, but I just need to kind of figure out with the home games, because I saw in July they don't really play at home. So maybe, I don't know. I will have probably a call with them to see if I can come out in August or something, because I think that'd be really nice to kind of get to know the fans, the city, and I mean, obviously to see a game. Was the atmosphere there? Because I saw a lot of people in the arena, and that was really shocking to me to see. That's really nice to see.
I was there. There was like, I think 17,000 something at a preseason game.
That's
and
crazy.
Tomorrow is season opener, and I bet there will not be like an open seat. Everything is going to be taken. Everyone wants to be a part of history and go to the first ever Valkyries game. I might try to sneak in my camera, which is usually allowed, but sometimes they don't allow it. So I'm always confused if I could bring it or not. So Valkyries, if you're listening to this, just like, let me bring in my camera, please.
but they don't give the,
that would be cool to get you.
They don't give like the passes or something.
They do probably. I haven't signed up for like the media stuff yet. Maybe that's something I should look into so I could bring in my camera. But I'm going to go with my partner. You know, we want to sit and be with the fans. And but it's something I've been looking forward to for like multiple years. And it's just so cool to see it all in fruition. Of, you know, there was finally, we had the expansion draft in like November or December, and now we had the actual draft, and you were who we selected, and now, you know, hopefully everyone here gets to know you through this podcast. So I'm super excited to watch you play, especially during Eurobasket, during the Spanish League, whenever you come over next year. I know that, you know, this is a fan base that you could tell they've been waiting for this for a long time. When I went to that preseason game, I've been to so many Warriors games, so many college, high school. Never, that was my first WNBA game, because we didn't have one in the local market. So I never went to, you know, any of the surrounding ones like the Sparks in LA or the Mercury in Phoenix. But so last Tuesday, the first preseason game was my first ever WNBA game. And I'm used to, like, you know, in the NBA games when they put the camera on fans and they start dancing, it's like, haha, this is like funny, but like, nice. And in the WNBA, I don't know if this is a WNBA thing or if this is just Valkyrie's fan base was just waiting for this to happen, just a team so they could celebrate anything and everything. But they put someone on the camera, that person gives 2% effort to dance, and everyone went nuts. The entire arena was just like going crazy. And it could just, I just felt like it was just, you know, they've been waiting for a team, and they just want to cheer at anything and everything because it's just been so long. And so, you know, there were these kids playing at halftime, which I'm used to seeing. But for the WNBA, in this WNBA game, it was just like, you know, 8-year-old kids playing full court. And they were going nuts at every single basket, every single steal, every single block. Like, the announcer recognized that people were going nuts, so that she grabbed one of the players and did a post-game interview with them. And everyone was just going nuts. It's just like a really wholesome environment that I'm not really used to when I attend basketball games. So, you know, I'm excited to see that play out, and I can't wait for you to be a part of that as well. So, when does the Spanish League start so we could watch you there too? Do you know, or is it like?
I think it starts like end of September.
Okay,
something like that. Yeah.
Well, you know, this podcast will always probably have like a little use day segment where we keep the people updated on how you're doing over there. So. Yeah, I've got nothing else. Where can people find you on Instagram or any of the other social media platforms?
Yeah, mostly, I mean, Instagram. I have a TikTok, but I don't really post. It's just my last name, basically. Mm-hmm. If you can pronounce it.
We'll link it. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to hit the drawing board after this podcast and just keep saying it over and over again until, like, the pronunciation, the accent or whatever just, like, fits. But you also have the camera, the photo page as well. That's just like your net last name, and or are we trying to keep that one private?
No,
I mean, you put it on your story.
Yeah, I always put it. No, it's not private. It's just like to keep it like kind of separate from the main page.
Yeah, I mean, even then, I'm excited for you to get to San Francisco because you got to bring your camera because this is a pretty picturesque city, like with all the
I will do. I will do a nice video. Yeah, I will do. Yeah. I'm planning already to do it.
Nice. Well, you know, with that being said, thank you, Yustay. I'll try the last name when I get off the podcast. I'm not going to try it right now. but with that being said, my name is Brian, and thank you everyone for listening. Yustay, do you have any closing thoughts or we're good to end it here?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, Brian. Really, thanks for doing this. And like for the fans who's watching this, really, I'm really excited to come to San Francisco and to attend the game this summer at least. And then, I don't know, just be ready for 2026 because I know I am. And just thank you again.
Awesome. Well, that will cap it off here, folks. Have a good one.
All right, welcome back to the very first episode of Valk's Valley. I thought she was a breath of fresh air. I really enjoyed it. She is at that stage of her career where she's been through the rigor a little bit. Like, she knows the beats to hit, but at the same time, there was still a refreshing, like almost a wanting to talk about things that maybe people don't know about her, and maybe her giving us a glimpse of her life and her life as a young professional. I thought that was a really fun interview, and I'm glad that you did hit on those early things of getting to know who she is as a young person, as a young professional, because then when she was able to talk about her career and her decisions, you're like, wow, she's got experience. Like, this isn't a person, you know, making a decision to not come to the WNBA who hasn't thought about it. It's very clear that this is part of her professional rise in doing something that she's going to be doing for many, many years.
Yeah. I said, again, this is me not remembering if I either told her before we started recording or while we were recording, but the goal was to get to know her so that people, you know, the audience who listened got to know her through that. And I think that was one of the things that was my goal going into it. And I feel like that was achieved. So I really do hope that people enjoyed that because it was really fun to record.
So is there anything after the interview that you were like, oh man, because as you're rapping, you're basically telling her, I exhausted my questions. I didn't even think I was going to get to them. And I told you before the interview, I was like, you know, you should plan for just in case that the interview may not be as long as you think. And, you know, she may have plans or whatever. And so get to some of the things that you really, really want to ask early. But then you were able to get through everything, which was awesome. Was there anything after you were done where you were like, huh, maybe I should have asked her that, or maybe I'll have to ask her again the next time if we do get to have her on?
Yep. So, yeah, there was like 24 questions I had written down, and we got through all of them. And then when we were so after the podcast, I asked her to stay for a little bit because, of course, you know, you told me her audio needs to upload. So I was like watching as the bar was completing, and I was like, dude, it's almost there. You can leave here in a second. I swear it's almost there. But
inside podcasting. Yeah, there.
But I was asking her a few more questions that I did think of after that. I'm bummed I didn't ask in the podcast, and I'm sure she wouldn't mind me sharing this, but I was asking, like, you know, what's your favorite, you know, if people were to visit your home country, Lithuania, where would you recommend? And she said her hometown, where she was raised, starts with a P. She's, I hope, you know, you stay, if you're listening to this, apologies for my pronunciation. It's like Palanga or something, starts with a P, kind of like Palaga or one of those two. And she said that. And then I also asked her how it was like playing with Dominique Malanga, who just made her WNBA debut yesterday. She said it was cool that, you know, Dominique came to the team. And then I think she was on loan for a year, but then she came back. So it was really cool to play with Dominique. And I think that was the most of it. Maybe I think Spain's like her favorite country. That might have been in the podcast to visit. But yeah, no, just she was very, helpful and courteous with her time. So much appreciated.
So she did say that she was going to hopefully come to the Bay Area in the summer, and it would be nice to see her at a game, or nice to hear that, you know, she's talking with the team, because this is something where after, like, before you were able to talk to her, I was like, oh man, is this even a reality, or is this going to be like a thing where, because you're starting to see this, or you're seeing this where some players are coming into the league and they were drafted like many, many years ago. And with her age, you would think, well, yeah, I mean, if she was like 19 and she decided to wait until she was 21, Valkyrie's fans would just have to be patient. But, you know, just the way that she said it, it was just kind of matter of fact. It was like, yeah, I plan to be there next year. That's part of the plan, and we're good. And so after I heard you talk to her, I was like, man, now I can't wait till next year. I can't wait to see her play. And if you watch the first game, which we're getting to, there are things that she does, and maybe she does need to get bigger and stronger and all of that. That could have been beneficial to the Valkyries in game one.
Yeah, I think I have some thoughts about game one, but you definitely could have used her natural skill and playmaking and vision and, you know, just, yeah, making the right plays. But I don't know. Are we getting into game one a little later, or should I drop my take?
No, let's talk about it now, because you were there live. You sat at the very top of the Chase Center.
Yep, I was in the nosebleeds, literally the last row. My back was touching the wall, and then our guy Obi texted me. His girlfriend Lizzie texted me and my partner, and she was like, "Seat open, two seats open next to us. They told us they're leaving. Come through." So we just moved up. Still in the second level, but it was, instead of like row 217, it was row 209. So we got to experience the second half of the game a little bit closer and a cooler view. So it was a lot of fun, you know, kind of the similarities of that first preseason game where it just felt like a wholesome crowd. They had, you know, some of their timeout games going, you know, and this time they finally had a t-shirt gun, because I was pretty close in the first preseason game, but I stood up for a t-shirt and no one could get it past like the 10th row. And I was like, okay, well. but yeah, E40 performed at halftime. You saw all the celebrities there. I thought there were going to be more celebrities, but hey, I didn't. Ali Wong, cool to see. I think the mayor was there. I think, you know, of course, all the Warriors players, Kuminga, Buddy, Pods, Lacob, Kerr.
Did you see the Kuminga thing? Sure they showed it.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I was texting you and Ben.
They announced Kuminga, and Kuminga's there, but he wants to show the camera that he's sitting next to Joe Lacob. And so he brings him in, and he's pointing at Joe.
Okay.
And then they didn't say Joe Lacob at that moment.
30-second Jonathan Kuminga thing. Do you think he's that surgical of a contract guy where he made that move? He did that on purpose? Or do you think he was just a shy 21-year-old who was like, I don't want all the spotlight on me, Joe, come here?
I think it was Joey Lacob being a little bit strategic and surgical in making sure that Kuminga was next to him.
Because I think, I don't know if you saw the Giannis stuff on Twitter last night. I think that was purely surgical. I think Giannis, I don't know if you saw, but people were asking him questions and he decided to start responding to everyone. Someone asked him what he thought about Steph and he was like, greatest shooter of all time, him and Dame. Someone asked him what his all-time starting five was. It was Steph at the one, MJ at the two, KD, LeBron, Kobe. And then someone asked him, like, what's your favorite city to be in? He was like, Miami, or any of the Florida cities. So it felt like surgical with, you know, he's purposefully saying two destinations that he might want to go to, but he probably might not even end up in. But I just don't know. I don't know if Kuminga's there, but I remember that story he put out against the Nuggets when Jokic hit that buzzer beater and he leaked to Shams that Kerr benched him at the end when he shouldn't have been benched. But I don't know. I thought it was interesting. I got it on camera. I'll have to send it to you, but I have that whole part on camera.
The whole, like, if Kuminga was being strategic, he would have probably sat next to Steve, because Steve was there. Mm-hmm. And that's because that's the feud, right? The feud in everybody's sort of mythical booking of pro basketball is that Steve and Kuminga hate each other. And I mean, we're not there, but Steve is hard on Jonathan. And I'm sure a lot of it is like, they want Jonathan to play a certain way. But that would have been the thing, is if Jonathan and Steve sat together, I think that would have been the surgical thing.
Last thing, it was just super funny that, you know, Kuminga was sitting by Lacob, and then during halftime when Kuminga went to go get food, Kerr took the spot. But Kerr was then gone by the time Kuminga got back. It's like they had a restraining order. Like, they couldn't be within 100 feet.
They probably texted. They probably texted his guy, hey, he's coming back. You better scurry. I thought it was really well done. Now, I'll talk a little bit about the broadcast because I guess I didn't realize that this was going to happen. So ION had the game, which meant that KPIX didn't have the game. So KPIX did the pregame. So I just assumed that it would be like a simulcast or maybe like what the Warriors do when they're on TNT is you get the Warriors version, then you get the TNT version.
Mm-hmm.
There was no KPIX version. So I don't have ION on my Hulu Live TV package. So I wouldn't have been able to watch it. I have a Samsung television. And I think if I figured out how to use the Samsung, whatever that service is, I think I could have actually watched ION. But then I would have had to watch the game live. And I don't like watching any games live because I need to get through the games and I need to fast forward through commercials and all that. So instead, what I did is I just watched it through the WNBA League Pass app because it was free this weekend. Mm-hmm. But even then, there's not a great sort of like fast forwarding mechanism. Mm-hmm. Like I could pause the game and then like it fast forwards in like 30 second increments, but it's not very intuitive. And so that was a little frustrating for me. But I did actually get through the full game almost by the time that the game was over live. So I did watch it a good, it's just a different way. Like I like to do it the way that I do it just for, you know, it's kind of like watching tape. Like I don't want to sit there and watch commercials and like I have a finite amount of time to get through all the things I need to get through. But I do wonder if there's going to be a little bit of a fervor because I did hear from people who were excited to watch game one and they're like, where is this game? What is ION? I have no idea what this is. And this goes back to some of the things that we were talking about over the summer, which is like, how do you market the sport to fans when they're kind of unsure even how to watch because it's kind of spread all out all over the place. There's Amazon, there's ESPN, there's ABC, there's ION. And I can't imagine I was the only person who was like, oh, I thought this was going to be also on KPIX. Like they never made that clear that it wasn't going
to
be like that.
Yeah, there's not a great way for this other than to pay attention to like social media. But I think the way I do it is going on the WNBA app, you go on the schedule and you could see what broadcast it is when it says like Valkyries versus Sparks. It'll say like ION right under it. I want to say I'm not 100% sure with this, that if you don't have League Pass, I think ION's free if you watch it on the WNBA app. And
oh, really? That's interesting.
I think. Oh, man. No.
Well, we'll have to test that. We'll test that for the next time.
Yeah. What do you think of it? I thought it was awesome. The ION broadcast. I missed the first quarter, basically. So I went back.
Well, how did you watch it? You watch it through the WNBA app.
Yeah. It wasn't like a home game where it's like you can't watch it for 3 days on the NBA app. Like on the WNBA app, it let me watch it like right after. But in comparison to some of those KPIX preseason games, like I hope KPIX is just like going side by side from one of their preseason games to that ION broadcast and being like, this is like night and day. Like, and of course, it's none of the people who are speaking's issue. It's like the technical side of how it looks, how it, you know.
It looks way better.
Way better.
There was no yellow haze mm-hmm. on the court like during the first two preseason games. And the second preseason game, we didn't even mention this. I thought it was embarrassing. Maybe no one else cares. But it was very clear to me that the announcers were not in Phoenix at the arena.
Yeah, there's a delay.
They were in a studio because there was a delay, and there was a point where Morgan's audio just completely wipes out in mid-sentence, and then she comes back. And maybe I have the ear for it because we do stuff
no,
like
I
this.
Heard it.
And, you know, I'm a broadcasting major, yeah. So I'm kind of listening for that stuff. But I was like, this is really embarrassing. And I get it. WNBA is kind of, you know, the burgeoning league. But Joe Lacob has money. Like, what's going, like, they should have, I feel like it, more than anything, the Warriors group, the Golden State group with the Valkyrie should have the creme de la creme of everything. Like, why is this broadcast? Maybe it's just the KPIX. Like, they're working with KPIX and this is their fumbling. But, you know, NBC Sports Bay Area, I was talking about this. Like, why doesn't NBC Sports Bay Area have these games? There's so many different NBC Sports Bay Area channels. If there's a Giants game playing at the same time, then you have the, you know, the other station where you can throw the games on. Like, I, that thing just befuddles me. I'll give the KPIX thing a chance, but it just seemed very, very minor league compared to even college basketball. Like,
yeah,
you know, like I know there's a ton of money in college sports, but still, like, this is supposed to be the professional version of the sport. And I've just been very disappointed in that. But I did like the Ion broadcast. I thought the Ion broadcast was really, really good. And if KPIX can get to that level, I won't complain.
Yeah, at all. I think, you know, hopefully, like, you know, just like it was preseason for the team, hopefully it was just preseason for KPIX. Like, they were just figuring stuff out. Because I feel like I have seen some bad preseason Warrior games in recent years. So, you know, when they were in, like, Hawaii this year, I remember, like, it didn't look great. But, you know, that would make sense because they're not in their home setup. But, yeah, I'm totally with you. If it looked like Ion, I had no notes for the Ion broadcast. They finally took away that green screen when Morgan and the other announcer talk in the beginning, and they just put the Valkyries, like, logo banner behind it, and it was like just a real, like, bed sheet, basically. Like,
KPIX needs to get rid of the green screen. Mm-hmm. Zena Kata looked 8 feet tall, yeah, and Vern Glenn looked 3 feet tall. Like, that was ridiculous. I was like, this is a professional television broadcast.
What if that's just the reality, though? Zena is like 6'3" or something, 6'4".
No, I'm sure she's much taller than him, but the way that they shot it made it even look like it looked like cartoon.
Get rid of the green screen, like, all together. Yeah,
just they need to refigure that part out. So this isn't coming from anything other than I want the broadcast to be really, really good. Yeah. Like, this is, like, you know, we're used to a certain level of professionalism. So I hope that I'm not the only one saying this. I hope enough people watch.
No way.
And they're like, what's going on here, man?
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the game. So they were competing for about 2.5 quarters before Kelsey Plum just decided to cook and run away with it. Julie Van Loo turned into Steph Curry for like a minute and was just like throwing up threes, bringing down the rain. That was really fun to watch. You know, Tiffany Hayes, she can actually get to the, she might be the only one, by the way, who can get to the cup. There were some finishing issues, but she looked quick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where the outside shooting is going to come from. They have not been good in any of the three games so far with the three ball.
No, the second game they were. That's how they won it. But then again, that kind of felt like a lucky.
And then they cut the one that had all the shots. Yeah.
I mean, Kate, you point to Kate. You know, first game she was like 0-for, like 9 or something or whatever she was, and then this game she gets the start and she still can't make a bucket. I don't know if she's scored.
There's a space thing that they're going to have to figure out so that she has more open stuff, because she was kind of getting locked up. And, you know, the athleticism part, we watch a lot of NBA, so you can kind of go, oh, this person's going to cook this person. And, you know, Kate, I saw Kate play Unrivaled, and I thought her movement was really good at Unrivaled. But so far in the three games with the Valkyries, or two games, she missed one of the preseason games. She looks like she hasn't been able to get past her defender.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a problem. But I think they'll figure out some space things, because she needs a little bit of room to get her shot off. And we know that she can actually shoot the basketball. So I'm looking forward to that. But what I thought was Carla Late, she's quick. And I think she can get to spots. The one thing holding her back is the shooting piece, because she had some open corner threes that I was like, okay, if she can make this shot, she's actually going to play a lot, because that's where they need some buckets to come from. The one who shot the best was Temi. She was awesome. She's just at the top of the key. She pulled like 8 times, made 4 of them. I was like, man, I wish we had a stretch 5 like that on the Warriors. Yeah. Maybe they'd still be playing right now.
Yeah.
But that was great. So, you know, she was my, when we were doing the early stuff with the expansion draft, and I was like, I hope that they can get her. And you said, there's no way Indiana lets her go. Yeah. And then they did. And then we got her. So it was like kind of like the perfect thing for me, because I really liked watching her play on Indiana. Now, Indiana replaced her with some really good players as well. Mm-hmm. That team looked awesome yesterday on Saturday. But I thought Temi looked great. And, you know, they're going to have, you know, they have these vets who are going to be there. You know, Monique Billings and Thornton. They're going to be solid, but they're not. It doesn't look like they're going to be the ones to kind of just like, uh-oh, when we need a bucket, who's getting it? Who's taking over? It may come from the point guard, Van Loo, when she's on the court, because she just had no fear. She was like, I'm just gonna go, because she, you know, you mentioned a couple of episodes ago, I think you mentioned sometimes coaches are fans of players who may remind them of themselves. And I never saw Natalie Nakase play, but it seems like she probably really enjoys the Van Loo spirit in the way that Van Loo plays.
Yeah. I got a few notes from the game, but yeah, Van Loo, I think I don't know. What have we decided on the blue sky thing? Is it I blue skied or I, no, that doesn't sound right. I the post.
Yeah. Posted. Yeah.
I think after engaged, the first preseason game, I was just like, Julie Van Loo needs to be starting for this team on the first game. And I've just been, you know, super high on her. Of course, she's, you know, not a rookie by any means. She's a second year player, but also she's, you know, in her early 30s. So I think she kind of is who she is at this point. And who she is just a really fun player who I think on a contending team is probably like one of the first subs off the bench. Just, you know, the fearlessness of sensing the crowd too in those three straight threes. Like, she was playing off the crowd similar to how a player in Golden State would do. I think she went over to Steve Kerr and said, like, if Steph's out, like, I'm here. But there, I think, I don't know if you, so when I got there, Ray Burrell for the Sparks had already gotten injured and carried off the court. But when I went back and watched it, I was like, oh, so that's what happened. That's how Carla got her three free throws. Carla stuck her leg out. If they reviewed that, that's offensive foul going the other way. So, but I think, you know, like you said, competitive for 2.5 quarters. I think what they're going to run into, and I wonder, you know, I could be wrong, but I wonder if Natalie's going to, if senses that right now, is that their five is never going to be as good as the other team's five. If you look at some of the substitutions in the closing minutes in the fourth quarter, it is just swapping Monique Billings for Temi Fagbenle like five times or however many times it was. I think with the Valkyries, they need to understand that their five is not better than the other team's five. So in the closing minutes, they're probably always going to lose that stuff. I think where they go on runs and where they have fun is where they're constantly subbing and they're giving different players looks. Did all 12 play yesterday? I think so. Or sorry, the nine played because there's three injured. But Kiara Linskins got run. I didn't think she looked good, but she got run. But
yeah, she did.
Carla was the only, you know, Carla had some nice moments, but she had some, you know, silly turnovers. So did Van Loo. Van Loo had a bunch of silly turnovers too, but Carla was the only plus on the team, plus nine. But I think that, you know, if they're going to try to roll out their best five versus the other team's best five, like you regularly would in closing minutes, you're always probably going to lose that stuff unless you're on like a hot streak of, you know, these players are the ones that are hitting the shots. But I think that they need to make more subs in clutch time than normally teams would, just to bring in that fresh, you know, the energy and just a different look. Because like I said, you know, it's an expansion team. Tiffany Hayes is our best player. Tiffany Hayes won Sixth Woman of the Year last year. So she was first one off the bench for a contending team. So that kind of shows you where we are. And I had a fun time watching the game. I think, you know, there's a lot of good things to pull from it, but I think they need to make more subs than you're used to seeing in the fourth quarter.
And remind me, who do they expect to come back after Eurobasket? Because there's a couple of players who theoretically could be joining the team, right?
It's just Rupaire. So Zanda Lassini is still injured. Talbot's still injured. Janelle Salon just won her Italian League finals. So she's, you know, still getting into the swing of things after her season. So hopefully, you know, she's the player who's going to be in that starting lineup. I don't know when, but she's going to be in that starting lineup. But coming after Eurobasket, the two remaining unsigned players, I think it's just Ileana Rupaire and Yuste. So Ileana Rupaire, older sister of Trailblazers guard Ryan Rupaire. She has some WNBA minutes. I think she was on the Aces when she was younger, and not much minutes or not much productivity, but some of her games in France have been, you know, pretty like, oh damn. So I think that Kiara Linskins is going to get cut when Rupaire reports, because they play the exact same position. That's why I thought the Kiara Linskins ad made sense. Like, you know, they were kind of short on bigs. And then she also plays Ileana's position, so it'll be an easy cut and add once Ileana reports.
And then you mentioned the MVP, or the Italian, the won the championship. So have you heard the plan for her coming over?
She's here. She was on the bench.
Okay, so she's just has
suited up.
Interesting. Oh, I wonder what the delay is.
It's probably, I mean, this is, you know, she's only been here for like 3 days as of the opening day. So
she just has not been practicing with the team.
Exactly. And she's ready to go probably in terms of conditioning, because, you know, she just played a long final. She won finals MVP. But, you know, just, I guess, getting acclimated with the team. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's good then, because they have somebody who could probably play minutes, who is just kind of waiting to play.
All three of those people that are on the bench that did not play will be getting a good minute share. I think Salon is a starting caliber small forward that every team wants, that would give a first round pick for in an instant. She's really good.
So that's something to look forward to. Okay, so I guess the last thing here is, so we got through game one. At least it sounds like the in-arena experience was off the hook.
Yeah.
They filled up the entire building. It looked like people were having a blast. So I really like to see that. Warriors supported. They won't always be there. I'm sure that, you know, Joe probably was like, hey, I need you guys here at least for one. But Steph did say that he wanted to be there and support. So hopefully Steph is there a few times this year. I think we're going to go together around June, third week of June. I've kind of penciled in maybe the Connecticut game as the one that we'll go to. But what do you think? How are you going to try and get out there a few more times? Like what, you know, it's obviously, it's not like it's free, but it's not as expensive as going to a Warriors game. What are your plans for getting back out in the arena?
I want to go as much as I can. And I think it was like a, you know, it was such a fun experience. I will not pay that price every single time. If that price is like that every single time, you will not catch me in another game. But I think, you know, I saw that the get-in price, you know, for some of these weekday home games tend to be, it's like a, you know, not a team with Caitlin Clark, Paige Beckers, or
if you're willing to sit in the second level, it's not bad at all.
Yeah, I think it's like $13.
Once you get down to the first level, it becomes a little bit more pricey. Like it makes you think. It's like, oh yeah, should I get it or not? But so for instance, the Connecticut game that
that's got to be so cheap. You should be able to get us like courtside.
No, it's not that cheap. You know, you're talking about $100 a ticket.
That sounds too much.
To not sit on the second level. And I think you're right. I think when I looked, it was the day after the home opener. So yeah, there's all of a sudden more interest, and it'll probably come down.
I want to say, but when I was buying season tickets, they were going to price my seat at about $70 per game, and that was lower bowl. Mm. So I don't,
right.
I imagine that's got to go down, because Connecticut is just a team that has like no one, and it's, you know, they're like the Hornets of the NBA. Like there's no way that game is going to be $100.
Yeah, their entire team left in free agency. So, you know, I think it'll come, but you know, I don't want it to be very easy to get in, right?
Yeah.
Cause then you want the fan base to support. So
what I do wonder, though, kind of getting back to the team, is like the fan base is here. They're super happy. How patient will the fan base be? Because if you listen to this podcast, you knew Caitlin Chen wasn't going to make the team. But you also know they might be a 5-win team. Mm-hmm. You know, my hope is that they're in some of these games, hopefully longer than they were in the Sparks game. I want them to at least be in games like 3.25 or 3.5 quarters. And then the other team pulls away at the end. But this is going to be a team that, you know, I wonder if there's going to be fans being like, okay, why the hell is Yuste not here? Like, you know, what the hell are we getting from these players at the end of the bench?
It's the owner, right? The owner said they wanted to compete right away. And I don't know if you read Marcus Thompson's article, but he had written a couple days ago that they were trying to do whatever it took to get Dallas's pick so that they could have the big splash with drafting Paige. Like, that was, you know, that was kind of the thing. But when the owner is saying, I want to win a title in 5 years or whatever, like, that creates the expectation with the fans, which I'm happy. Like, I think it's reasonable to say, yeah, this year they're not going to be very good. Like, that's just how expansion works. But at the same time, drafting Yuste is part of that process, because they could have drafted, and I wonder what happened. I wonder what would have happened if somebody else drafted Yuste before them, mm-hmm. who would have been their pick. Because you look at Washington, one game, but the Mystics fans are like, oh, Kiki Iriafen, Sonia Citron, these young high energy players. Like, if you had that with the Valkyries, like, today, I think there would be some intrigue, like, oh, you know, young players, but they just don't have anybody from the draft class. And it's really about learning about some of the players who have come over overseas, like you're saying. And that's hopefully what we can give information on this show, is like, no, this person is going to be really good. You just don't know them because they didn't play in the U.S. collegiate system for Notre Dame, or they didn't play for these big schools that get a lot of focus. So that I hope, because I'm learning about this too, and I know you're doing your research. So hopefully that's something that we can provide.
Yeah. And yeah, I think Iriafen's minutes looked really good. Sonia had a great game, but some of that Iriafen stuff, I was like, I still need to see a couple more. I was like, I don't know if she'll be able to do that in the WNBA. And then she was doing it a little bit in the WNBA. So she had a really good game. I do think I remember hearing on the Athletic WNBA podcast that if it was likely that the Connecticut Sun were interested in Yuste. So I think they were the pick after, or two picks after, Golden State. So if they didn't select Yuste, she would have gotten taken. But yeah, I mean, there's the case right there for Cheyenne or Caitlin Chen to have made the team, is just some of that, like, oh, wow, like, this is one of our draft picks, and we get to watch them and have some nice moments. And that just didn't end up being the case. So our rookies are, it's Carla Late is technically a rookie, and so is Janelle Salon. She's technically a rookie. She's never had any.
How old is she, by the way?
I think Janelle's 23.
Okay.
So it's around the same age as some of those players coming out of college.
Yeah.
Maybe a year older. Yeah. So
I'm excited. And look, man, Joe Lacob said it. He didn't say this specifically about the Valkyries, but he did say it about the Warriors, that they're light years ahead of these other teams.
Yuste's the light years pick, man.
She's the light years pick. She's absolutely light years pick. And after your interview with her, it just made me more excited for the pick. So good job on that interview. Hopefully people learned a lot about her, and they could follow her on Instagram, which I immediately did. Mm-hmm. Just her last name. I think it's a Jocyte. That's her Instagram handle. And then if you follow that, then you'll see the photography page that she has as well. And hope that people really got a lot of insight out of that. And I also hope that, you know, when we reach out to folks, that they understand that we are here. This is not just a, we're going to try to take advantage of Valkyrie's content. No, like, we really want to cover the team as good as two people who aren't actively part of the media can cover the team. So if you are listening to this show and you see an email from Brian or myself asking you to come on, like, we are treating this like the real deal. So
yeah.
I hope that other people also can, you know, they also see that we're doing this, and they check out the channel, the BSPN YouTube channel and the BSPN podcast feed. Subscribe and likes and all that stuff will be helpful for us, because this is an origin story, and we want to be here from the beginning and cover them as closely and as seriously and as fun as we cover the Giants and the 49ers and the Warriors. So,
yep.
I
just want to shout out Lauren really quick, her Yuste's agent. She is a part of the G Agency Women Agency. Elite International Sports Agency for Women's Hoops. So shout out to Lauren. Thank you for helping facilitate this. And you know, again, like when I reach out to some of these people, it's just very, I always make sure to, I'm very grateful when people respond, you know, when Sabrina responded, when, you know, Michelle responded. And of course, when Lauren, mm-hmm. I'm just very grateful that, you know, this is just very grateful. That's all I got to say.
Okay. So we will be back during the week. We do have to talk about the end of the Warriors season. So the next episode may be a Death Lineup episode where we do have the Valks Valley segment. Though, if you're following us on YouTube, we do clip Valks Valley clips separate from Warriors. So we do have Warriors exclusive content and Valkyries exclusive content on the YouTube channel. It's just in the audio feed. We don't want to make two short episodes, so we combine everything into the Death Lineup. But we're going to have more solo Valks Valley episodes throughout the season because they are in season and the Warriors are in the off season. So we will do that. All right. Appreciate Brian for doing the interview. Thank you to Eustay and her agent. That was a lot of fun. So for everybody, thanks for listening. For Bri, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply.